When she went back in, she noticed that the message light on her phone extension was winking, and wondered how long it had been on. "Hello?" she said to the receptionist. "Oh, Miss Macmillan, I'm so glad you called. Everybody's been trying to reach you. Your TV company, they're desperate to reach you. Can you call them?" "Why didn't you put them through?" said Tricia. "You said I wasn't to put anybody through for anything. You said I was to deny that you were even here. I didn't know what to do. I came up to give you a message, but..." "Okay," said Tricia, cursing herself. She phoned her office. "Tricia, where the hemorrhaging fuck are you?" "At the editing. They said..." "I know. What's up?"
"What's up? Only a bloody alien spaceship."
"What?
Where?"
"Regent's Park. Big silver job. Some girl with a bird. She speaks English and throws rocks at people and wants someone to repair her watch. Just get there." Tricia stared at it. It wasn't a Grebulon ship. Not that she was certainly an expert on extraterrestrial craft, but this was a sleek and beautiful silver and white thing about the size of a large ocean-going yacht, which is what it most resembled. Next to this, the structures of the huge, half-dismantled Grebulon ship looked like gun turrets on a battleship. Gun turrets. That's what those blank grey buildings had looked like. And what was odd about them was that by the time she passed them again on her way to reboarding the small Grebulon craft, they had moved. These things flitted briefly through her head as she ran from the taxi to meet her camera crew. "Where's the girl?" she shouted above the noise of helicopters and police sirens. "There!" shouted the producer while the sound engineer hurried to clip a radio mic to her. "She says her mother and father came from here in some parallel dimension or something like that. And she's got her father's watch and I don't know. What can I tell you? Busk it! Ask her what it feels like to be from outer space." "Thanks a lot, Ted," muttered Tricia, checked that her mic was securely clipped, gave the engineer some level, took a deep breath, tossed her hair back, and switched into her role of professional reporter on home ground, ready for anything. At least, nearly anything. She turned to look for the girl. That must be her, with the wild hair and wild eyes. The girl turned towards her and stared.
"Mother!"
she screamed, and started to hurl rocks at Tricia. Chapter 22. Daylight exploded around them. Hot, heavy sun. A desert plain stretched out ahead in a haze of heat. They thundered out into it.
"Jump!"
shouted Ford Prefect.
"What?"
shouted Arthur Dent, holding on for dear life. There was no reply.
"What did you say?"
shouted Arthur again, then realized that Ford Prefect was no longer there. He looked around in panic and started to slip. Realizing he couldn't hold on any longer, he pushed himself sideways as hard as he could and rolled into a ball as he hit the ground, rolling away from the pounding hooves. What a day, he thought, as he started furiously coughing dust up out of his lungs. He hadn't had a day as bad as this since the earth had been blown up. He staggered up to his knees and then up to his feet and started to run away. He didn't know what from or what to, but running away seemed a prudent move. He ran straight into Ford Prefect, who was standing there surveying the scene.
"Look,"
said Ford. "That is precisely what we need." Arthur coughed up some more dust and wiped some other dust out of his hair and eyes. He turned, panting, to look at what Ford was looking at. It didn't look much like the domain of a king, or the king, or any kind of king. It looked quite inviting, though. First, the context. This was a desert world. The dusty earth was packed hard and had neatly bruised every last bit of Arthur that hadn't already bruised by the festivities of the previous night. Some way ahead of them were great cliffs that looked like sandstone, eroded by the wind and what little rain presumably fell in these parts, into wild and fantastic shapes, which matched the fantastic shapes of the giant cacti that sprouted here and there from the arid orange landscape. For a moment, Arthur dared to hope that they had unexpectedly arrived in Arizona or New Mexico or maybe South Dakota, but there was plenty of evidence that this was not the case. The perfectly normal beasts, for a start, still thundering, still pounding. They swept up in their tens of thousands from the far horizon, disappeared completely for about half a mile, then swept off, thundering and pounding, to the distant horizon opposite. Then there were the spaceships parked in front of the bar and grill. Ah, the Domain of the King bar and grill. Bit of an anticlimax, thought Arthur to himself. In fact, only one of the spaceships was parked in front of the Domain of the King bar and grill. The other three were in a parking lot by the side of the bar and grill. It was the one in front that caught the eye, though. Wonderful-looking thing. Wild fins all over it, far, far too much chrome all over the fins, and most of the actual bodywork painted in a shocking pink. It crouched there like an immense brooding insect, and looked as if it was at any moment about to jump on something about a mile away. The Domain of the King bar and grill was slap bang in the middle of where the perfectly normal beasts would be charging if they didn't take a minor transdimensional diversion on the way. It stood on its own, undisturbed. An ordinary bar and grill. A truck stop diner. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Quiet. The Domain of the King.